It's time for Twink this week in Google. Gina Trapani is back. We've got baby pictures. We'll also talk about the Maps snafu, more Google killings, and, you know, of products, not people. And Mike Elgin joins us from Greece to tell us how best to use Google Plus. It's all next on Twig.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by Cachefly. CacheFly.com. This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 166, recorded October 3rd, 2012. 3.5 Dads. This Week in Google is brought to you by the new Squarespace. Squarespace introduces a new content management system, making it faster and easier to create a high-quality website, blog, or online portfolio. Plus, more than 50 new features, including mobile-responsive designs. For a free trial and 10% off your first purchase, visit squarespace.com and use the offer code TWIG10. And by Stamps.com. Use Stamps.com to buy and print real U.S. postage the instant you need it, right from your desk. For our special offer, go to Stamps.com, click the microphone, and enter TWIG. It's time for Twig This Week in Google Land. And here with us once again, we're so glad to get her back from mommy duties, Gina Trapani.
Hi.
Smarterware.org, Think Up app. I'll talk quietly.
Little baby's asleep.
Little Etta is sleeping.
Etta's sleeping. Hopefully I don't look too sleep deprived and that my baby brain won't affect the show too much.
You look
great. I apologize
great.
If I say something completely.
Jennifer always said that having children reduces your IQ bit by bit. You transfer the brains over to the baby.
When she was in the hospital, I would park the car and I would go see her, and then I'd go down and I would just wander through the parking lot because I couldn't remember where I parked the car. It's a sleep deprivation.
Yeah. Or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a biological fact. Mm-hmm. Anyway, we're so happy for you. Congratulations.
Thank you so much.
And we're so glad you could join us.
Yeah, me too. It's great to be kind of back at it a little bit, although I hope that no one's going to criticize my maternity leave the way they've been talking about Marissa Meyer's maternity leave.
Oh, my. Jeez. Well, we'll get right on that one in a second. But first, let me introduce our rest of our panel. Of course, Jeff Jarvis is also here from BuzzMachine.com, the author of What Would Google Do in Public Parts. Hello, Jeff. Silently.
He's shoulder.
Speaking. Oh, we had you muted. What? Are you having...
Am I here?
Yeah, we got you now. We got you.
You're not the first one to mute me in life, I'll tell you that.
Wouldn't it be nice to have a mute button in general?
I'm just impressed that Gina took the towel. Remember to take the towel off
her
shoulder.
Yes, the spit towel. Spit up towel.
I'm still learning to get that towel up on there first.
Oh, I'll tell you.
You'll learn.
It's good to just get cloth diapers for a week so that you have something. Because they make the best... never mind. We should really stop this now. Gina, you're with three old dads. Because all three of us have grown kids. So anything you want to know, we vaguely remember.
I need a lot of help, so I may hit you up.
And here's a man who's changed his share of diapers, ladies and gentlemen, from Sparta, Greece, Mike Elgin. Hey, Mike.
Hey, thank you for having me on.
It looks like you're in the storage cupboard.
Yeah, we have a little studio here.
Oh, and, nice.
It's quite nice and tiny. It has a balcony with like grape vines all over the place. It's very Mediterranean.
Ooh,
beautiful.
How nice.
And it's really, really nice. We're right downtown.
So jealous. Somebody said this.
I'm even jealous of myself.
The show is now 3.5 Dads.
It's a good name for it, actually.
I can't tell you on how many forms I crossed out the word father and put mother on.
Yeah.
So I'm happy to identify as a half dad.
Right on. Let's see what's going on in the world around us. Why don't we start with Marissa Meyer, since that's a topic near and dear to all of our hearts. The CEO, a new CEO of Yahoo.
On the cover of Fortune.
On the cover of Fortune. The world's 50 most powerful women. She doesn't look pregnant there.
No.
No. No.
No.
When is she due?
She had her baby boy on Monday, I think.
Wow. So she went from 0 to 60.
I heard she's crowdsourcing the name of the baby.
Well, that may have been my fault, actually. I got an email, but it was obviously a gang email.
That's where I saw it.
One imagines, you know, thousands of people and saying that we didn't have a name yet as suggestions welcome. So I tweeted, boy, she's crowdsourcing the name of the baby. That got picked up all over. I hope I didn't offend her.
But no, I love that.
Cute. It was kind of great.
I don't know if they've come up with a name. Baby boy Meyer was born Sunday night. And, of course, the controversy immediately. She intends to return to the workplace as soon as possible, likely in 1 or 2 weeks.
Strong lady.
But you know what? She said she was going to do that all along, right?
Mm-hmm. And yeah, she was pretty clear about that from the beginning.
Yep.
And certainly, I don't know if her husband's staying home or what. I mean, I don't think it's anybody's business what their arrangement is. But I think you, as a new parent, understand why it would be nice to stay home for as long as possible.
Yeah, I mean, listen, she's going to have lots of care. She's going to have an army of folks taking care, helping her out and taking care of her and taking care of her kid. And she's got her husband. Obviously this is an issue close to my heart right now. And it's just interesting to me. I mean, there just aren't that many dads, you know, who knew CEOs who were men who would, you know, that have full articles written about how she, you know, is doing a disservice to her baby boy by not staying home.
I think there is the issue, though, that she should probably be very clear. This is my choice. This is what I'm doing. This does not mean that this is recommended or expected behavior of other Yahoo employees.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure they have a much more generous paternity leave policy than that.
Right. I mean, there's that question of the role model question, right? Of like, right. What kind of example is she setting? I think that the reality is that she has a lot more money than most people in the world, and that she is going to be, her son is not going to be neglected.
And for all we know, she has a playpen and a crib in her office. I mean, we don't know
that is one rumor that there's an office next door that'll be devoted to the kid coming over, which I think would be a wonderful thing.
Let's do it that way. What's wrong with that? I think
it'd be a great thing to have daycare. I mean, this is sound horrible and flip, and I don't mean it this way, but I was in the offices of Boxy yesterday. There are two really cute dogs walking around. You know, you can have kids around the office too. There's no harm in it.
Well, the thing is that they didn't hire her for her to use her hands or
yes.
anything. She's using her
Good
mind.
Point. She's not assembling iPhones. Good point.
As Bush used to say. So she's still got her brains at her command. She's an executive. She's not, you know, she had, like, for example, I don't think I could do it because I have to type to do my job, but she doesn't. She has meetings and she issues edicts, presumably, and you can do that while you're holding a baby. I think it's awesome.
She should have a baby Bjorn on and just go, you do this, do that. And that's all she. Anyway, I think it seems a little sexist to make a big deal out of this. The only concern would be that there's some sort of unstated expectation now at Yahoo. Well, Marissa took 2 weeks. What are you doing?
No, I don't think they'd do that.
Especially
here in California. I'm ever amazed. I talk to people. Tim Armstrong talked at an Ad Week event in New York yesterday, and people asked him about Marissa and her plans, as did I. When I was visiting Google, I asked about Marissa. When other people asked about Marissa, the respect she has across our industry is really, really impressive. And you know, we've talked about this on the show a lot about how just her going to Yahoo gave Yahoo hope. And that lives. People are saying that she's done all the right things so far in terms of internal culture. You know, still not clear what her strategy is, but I think that she keeps the goodwill of the industry still. And now she has a cute little baby boy without a name.
Yeah.
More to the point. Go ahead.
She commands respect because she works hard.
Yeah.
Right.
Yes.
And that's, you know, and that's, I think that's just, that's part of this. When my girl was born, I was like, oh, where am I going to post pictures? You know, I don't want to be that parent that like floods, you know, Facebook.
Why the hell not? Flood it.
Well, I was like, I want to use a photo sharing app and I don't really want to do Instagram. So
what did you decide?
I went back to Flickr.
Interesting.
Yeah, I said, you know, I talked to my friends and they were like, Flickr's for kids. And, you know, Flickr's really great. You know, they really had that kind of early Google Circles concept. There's contacts, friends, and family. So most of my baby pictures are marked as family only. I have a couple of public ones up. And, you know, there's not a lot of people there, but, you know, as a friend of mine said, you know, family will seek out cute pictures of the baby like truffle pigs. I was like, oh, am I going to make my family set up, you know, Flickr accounts? It's like, they'll do it.
Did you set up a Etta Trapani or whatever website.com?
I did register her domain name. She actually has my wife's last name. Yeah, so I have her domain name, and I have a Twitter handle, although I have not started tweeting as her.
She has a Twitter handle.
She does, but I haven't started tweeting as her because I haven't decided whether or not I think that's weird. I'm kind of on the fence about it.
No, you should tweet. Well, let me think. You know what I love? Remember that Gmail ad where they created a Gmail account for the baby and then mailed, you know, moms and dad wrote letters to the baby, sent pictures. Wouldn't that be cool?
Yeah, that is a really...
When I saw that ad, it made me sad that we didn't have Gmail when Henry and Abby were born. I thought that would have been neat.
Yeah.
I think Etta should be the youngest verified Twitter account ever.
Make it so, Dick Costolo. We're talking to you here.
I may have to call in a favor because I had to get an underscore in her name. I wasn't thrilled. I may have to call in a favor for my the username and then the verified checkbox.
How about Miss Etta?
There's a lot of Ettas on Twitter. I thought it was a unique name. It really is not.
It's a beautiful name. I love that name.
Thank you.
Etta
Rebecca Bailey.
So, That's a great, for those who are listening, we are now observing pictures of Etta Rebecca.
We're now looking at pictures of my daughter. We probably shouldn't do this to listeners for too long. But.
Oh, there she is. Before she came home, she was in the hospital. Oh, she's not
the best.
That's my favorite one.
I know exactly what she's saying right there. I can read baby.
What's she saying?
Feed me.
No, she's saying Google. Apple dropped Google Maps from iOS 6. How good they?
Wow, she's wired. Where are my Google Maps?
Exactly.
I love it. Oh, is that a cute little munchkin? So, okay, we're going to stop talking babies.
Yeah. I want to see Marissa's baby on Flickr. That's all.
Marissa's committed, she would post pictures on Flickr of baby Marissa. We don't know the name yet.
She doesn't either, according to the last account.
Did you have Etta? Don't you usually have the name before the baby's born?
We had a working title.
Yeah. I like that. Working title Jarvis.
My parents were frightened that we were actually going to name Jake Axel.
Axel Jarvis.
We had a top two. We had two finalists and decided we wanted to look at her before we decided. So.
I was kind of hoping you'd name her Betty after Betty and Mad Men, but okay.
Oh.
Betty Bailey. That's a good name.
You got a thing for that Betty.
I do.
You do. January Jones. January is a kind of cool name.
I saw a picture of January Jones. I guess she lost a lot of that weight because she looked fantastic. She looked good.
I thought that was a fat suit.
I think it was a fat suit. But
yeah.
How to do the fat face? Was that prosthetics?
No, that's a good question.
She had a baby. I mean, she had baby, you know.
Oh,
baby.
That's right. She was pregnant.
The babies. Okay, changing the subject to something
This is now This Week in Goo Goo Dada.
Goo Goo Dada. Well, maybe that's the name of the show.
Yeah.
Mitt Romney preparing for the debates tonight went to Chipotle for lunch. And who is this guy on his left?
There was some intrepid reporter went and talked to him, and he says this is the face he does all the time.
This is a new internet meme in the making.
Oh, you're right.
Awesome profile picture.
Anyway, I'm hesitant to mention the C word. Because the May 11th, 20 or something like that, a year ago, episode of Twig was yesterday, pulled from Google, from YouTube, because we played a Chipotle ad.
Oh, you're effing me.
A year ago?
They just noticed. We got
an ad?
Yeah. Remember when we played, I actually had to get our staff, I think Tony Wang went through it, to look at it. I said, is there really a Chipotle copyright violation? And he went through it, and sure enough.
I'm tweeting this right now. Dear Chipotle
Let me give you the episode number. I have to launch my mail and get the complaint number. Do you know what it was? It was a two, what was it? Was it?
I love it when Jeff trolls Chipotle tweets, which is their Twitter handle.
It was just pulled for giving you free
ad back. Remember where they were going through the pastures and all that stuff?
Oh yeah, that they were saying that they humanely treat their animals.
Yeah, it was a good ad, and it was a news story, so it was fair use, you know, news coverage. B, it was a freaking ad for Chipotle, and they didn't. By the way, it wasn't just like a ding or anything. They yanked the video from YouTube. They had it taken down, and we got dinged on our, copyright violation.
All right, it's tweeted. Retweet. Tweet Army, retweet that.
Yeah.
That's so, it. We're going to start talking about Rubio's.
yeah. Did you hear that Mitt Romney went to Rubio's for a lunch before the debate? Or somewhere like it?
That Health Mex burrito is really good. All right, sorry.
Oh, we could really get them. I just, this is, you know, I only raise it as an example of the stupidity of the DMCA.
There was another stupid one in the rundown, wasn't there?
Oh, they're constant.
There was another one in the rundown today of a guy
today?
His own book. No, his own, he got pulled from, Google because he had a BitTorrent. Of his own
book. Google deranked him. Not deranked him, but they said you can't have AdSense on your page because you have links on your page to the torrents at Pirate Bay and other places of your own book. And, of course, it's an automatic thing. They see, thepiratebay.com, and they pull you the AdSense off. So he interacted with him, took down the links. I think maybe he mentions you could find it on the Pirate Bay. Still, they won't pull it down. And it's part of the problem is this this automated system.
Yeah. You think a human
the thing
ever
is,
judged
he did
this?
Everything right.
Right.
You know.
He did what they
he
asked.
He still pulled it. They still pulled it. But you know what? As far as I'm concerned, it's a competitive marketplace for customers. He just needs to go to another ad networker. That's all there is to it. If they want to have people using their ad network, then they need to not do this kind of stuff.
Wouldn't that be the way to handle it? That actually makes a lot of sense.
And it's bad press for them because a lot of people are talking about it, like us, for example, right now.
So I get, look at these YouTube information about your video all about Android may have content that is owned or licensed by TV Rainru. Information about frame rate. You may have content that is owned or licensed by Press Association. But most of the times they say it's still available. This claim is not penalizing. TNT 334, content owned or licensed by Futura Networks. But then, so most of the time I just ignore it and go, okay, fine. This Week in Google, 112, losers like us may have content that is owned or licensed by PCT.
Oh, all that was of a sudden, good episode, too.
But there, I got three of them, PCTV, all at once. It's like they all of a sudden looked at that video. Dow Jones, PCTV, neither of them pulled the site down or penalized us, but Chipotle did.
My argument remains that and I as Gina says, I'm sympathetic to the scale of the problem that Google and YouTube have here and the other issues that come upon them, but they've got to set up, I think, juries of human peers.
Well, there's also, and I think there's also fraud going on, because look at this. So here's here's the takedown. This contains content from Chipotle, Dow Jones, PCTV, and TV Bandeirantes of Brazil. I guarantee you there's nothing owned by TV Bandeirantes in Brazil.
Leo, your shirt. It came from Carnival.
So what's happening? I believe it. I would love to get some confirmation on this, but I think that people are gaming this system. Because they don't want it taken down. See, TV Bandeirantes, what they probably wanted was, fine, we'll run some ads on it and we'll share in the revenue from this. And I would suspect that that's what's going on, is that if I were a company, this would be an interesting way to try to make money. Let's just assert copyright violation, not a ding. Just say, can we run some ads on there? Because that's one of the options. You get some options. You don't have to insist on a takedown. Now, Chipotle took it down, which is probably pissing off TV Bandeirantes. Because they don't get their ads now. Anyway, it's still down. We appealed it, and it's still down. So I don't know what the status
It just seems like this is Google's weak spot. This idea of like there not being recourse or not, no like human review or lack of customer service. Like we hear these stories about, you know, AdSense accounts getting shut down or you know, somebody's Gmail account unreachable and Google just being unreachable and it just being difficult to, you know, have plead a case, you know, in any situation, either a copyright claim or just in general, Google's customer service has not been. And very purposefully, it's not been something that they do, right?
I mean, but they, can
that's
they?
Another story, Gina. Well, okay, right. You go first, Leo.
Is it practical? I mean, how many videos are uploaded every second to YouTube?
Right, I don't know. It's a good question. I don't know that it is, but Google deals in problems of scale. But from the very beginning, I think Stephen Levy wrote about this in the Plex, right? Like the founders of Google would, you know, they would get email from people complaining about search results, and he said, don't write people back. Don't waste our time, you know, emailing right. users back. Let's just fix the problem algorithmically on our side. You know, let's just gather the data, do our magic on the back end, and fix it like that. But that leaves a lot of people, I think, in the lurch especially when you're publishing content or using services like an ad network.
Well, that's the thing. It right. might be one thing for search. I can understand that for search. You know, people complain about search results. Hey, look, it's algorithmic. This is search results. We're reflecting the web. We don't have to respond to that. But pulling down a YouTube video because of inaccurate content takedowns.
Right. Accusations. It's almost libelous to you that you would steal stuff.
Right.
And
Gina, you're right. Their reflex is always the algorithmic solution. I think what Leo said earlier is that this needs a human solution. Mm-hmm. Raises the question of scale, but I do think it's an opportunity that you have some brand. If somebody goes to, like the story of the BitTorrent guy, he's gone through three layers now, clearly a human being. At some point, he deserves to have a human being to deal with.
I agree.
And there needs to be a way to do that. And I still think that this idea of juries of peers, mm-hmm. that you take all of your advertisers and the advertisers who don't want to find Google messed up, and, you know, you crowdsource with human beings this job of trying to verify that something just doesn't smell right, which on its face it doesn't. We put up an ad. It's a commercial. You want it spread around. There's no
issue. Well, the other thing is that I think they would save themselves a lot of trouble if they would sort of have kind of verified sources. So Twit is a known quantity. There's a lot of media that's discussed, and you could go over a history very quickly and determine that this sort of thing exists on coming from this news source, from this video source, and so sort of favor that source and assume that that source is doing something unless somebody makes a really strong case. You could go through and actually verify thousands of video sources. And basically say, okay, these are okay. These are legitimate operations that are, you know, covering media that are likely to come up with false positives if we treat them like everybody else. And then you can focus on the random videos coming from miscellaneous uploaders.
I suspect they're doing that, and we're just not big enough. I mean, I bet you ABC and NBC and CBS don't have this problem.
Well, I'll bet you that there is a white list.
Yeah.
And you notice that they don't want to admit to a whitelist because the whitelist is anti-algorithmic. How's that for a new structure of philosophy? Oh, that's just not algorithmic. But they have to. They have huge clients, and you're right, Leo. Then you're not big enough to be a huge client to just put on the do not bother list.
Right.
Well, if Leo's not big enough, then it's problematic. The whitelist just ain't working. I mean, if they had the concept of verified accounts on Google Plus, it doesn't seem like, you know.
Right. Well, big enough, I think, Gina. In this case, means big enough checks that go back.
That's exactly right. Big enough to want to do a business deal, something like that. Yeah.
Fair enough.
Well, it's frustrating for me. Fortunately, it's a year-old show. If it had been last week's show, it would be a costly error.
Twit Nation, at Chipotle Tweets. Come on.
You might as well go after TV Bandarias in Brazil while you're...
That's true.
No.
I mean, I'm still bitter that Chipotle has not bought a friggin' ad on Twig for all the free publicity.
Well, that's the funny thing. Why did they pull it? Because we played a Chipotle ad on Twit. That's why they pulled it.
You were eating Chipotle on the air at one point.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Anyway. Welcome to the wild world of the web. The world wide web.
If Glee did this, I'd be so upset.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a ticket. Moving along. Now that I've taken care of my personal issues,
And mine.
And,
so we've got
and Gina's.
And the copyright because claims out of the way.
Gee, I haven't had a haircut. I haven't skipped a haircut for this long since the 60s. What do you think?
Should I like it. Now? Well, that's interesting. Now, did you wash your hair last night or did you not?
Hey.
Did you condition it?
No.
It looks a little tufty.
It is. It's just long, but I'm just trying to go through my personal issues. Okay, Mike, your turn.
I don't have any. I'm smart enough, drinking olive oil by the gallon.
Ooh, yum. So, yum, yum, yum.
Good life.
I'll never forget Dean Ornish coming on my radio show, plopping down a bottle of olive oil, saying, "Would you drink that? Then why are you putting it in your food?" I think he's backed off on that a little bit now. Let us move along and talk a little bit about maps, but not a lot, just briefly. Maps are not in iOS 6. They're not on the iPhone 5. And Apple had to apologize for that. And even, this must have really made some people at Google's day, suggest maybe you should use Bing or Google Maps for the time being. We're sorry we screwed up. Wow.
Yeah. Well, points to Mr. Cook and Apple for just being upfront and somewhat humble. But yeah, that whole, hey, like visit their website and then add a link to it on your home screen. Yikes.
Farhad Manju makes a really interesting point in Pando Daily. He says, actually, since Tim Cook's apology, this Maps debacle has turned into a win for Apple.
I think that was the most fanboyish logic I have ever seen in my life. Try to justify absolutely everything that Apple does as a brilliant move.
Brilliant move.
Yeah. Oh, Jesus.
He says the headline is Mapgate is over. Apple won. Customers won. Google, not so much. His point with Google is true, though, that Google must have known, we've all known since June, and really we had a pretty good idea even long before then that Apple was planning its own mapping app. They were buying mapping companies. They even said a year ago when they had a privacy issue with data being stored on the iPhone, they said, well, we're collecting this data for a future app that will include traffic information. They really have not made this a secret. So Google certainly knew. Why didn't they have an app ready? Because every day that goes by without a Google Maps app is money down the tube.
Yes and no. I honestly come to think that Google is better off for at least a little while of it not being there, because people are now saying Apple's not perfect, that they do prefer Google Apps. And where do you get Google Apps? Well,
Android.
Yeah, okay. But he says, and he quotes Horace Dediu, who's pretty good on this stuff, the company has admitted it makes more in ads on the iPhone than it does on Android devices. Horace estimated Google makes about $6 a year on every iPhone compared to $2 for every Android phone.
In other words, is that search?
That's probably a lot of that is search. They don't charge for the apps.
And as somebody else said today, I think it might have been you, I don't know who it was, said that, Search Engine Watch, Danny, who said that probably now, if there was any thought of pulling Google Search off the iPhone,
That's true. They dare not now.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, because it would hurt them.
Yeah.
And I wonder why Apple didn't slam back up the Google app that existed.
Because it's an Apple app, and it's not. Now, the other side of the story, I think we talked about this last week, was according to some sources, Google was the one that killed the maps because Apple said, well, we don't have parity with Android. You need to give us turn by turn.
Future demands of Apple's, but there was still another year on the contract.
Right.
So Apple pulled it because they weren't getting what they wanted, which was turn by turn directions in the future.
Why wouldn't Google have a maps app ready? I understand the schadenfreude and the, but this is business. Let's be good business people.
Yeah.
There's a ton of data Google is no longer getting from Apple that is valuable, that has a real tangible value.
I go back to what I said, which is that I was drawn to this device by the services,
right,
not the hardware.
Right.
Right. And so the more addicted I am to Google services, the more I become, addicted to the Google lifestyle. To the point that when I stopped in Best Buy today, I stopped by the guy, the poor, very lonely guy who stands there day in and day out trying to pitch Chromebooks. And what a lonely job.
The Maytag
repair man and this guy.
Who did he piss off at Google?
Oh, jeez. He's wearing a Google shirt in Best Buy. He's the coolest guy at Best Buy. And I started talking to him, and I'm honest to God thinking about a Chromebook because I'm just so into the Google services now, and I just use them all. So I don't know. I mean, I'm not trying to. I could sound like the Google version of Farhad if I go too far on this, arguing this was Google's brilliant move. But all I'm actually trying to say is that I think that there is a silver lining for this in Google more than for Apple.
But the theory that Google is that Google's withholding and deliberately sort of foregoing revenue and visibility on iOS is inconsistent with what it's done historically with a gazillion other things. I mean, a lot of things have actually come out, a lot of Google things have come out on iOS before the Android version. And for the most part, with the exception of this turn-by-turn directions thing on Maps, which I don't really know the details about that, but for the most part, it's always been kind of shockingly and refreshingly conspicuous that Google has tried to get everything on both devices. I think it was even the Google Plus app came out first on iOS.
Right.
And then it came out on Android weeks later. So it just doesn't feel right that they would do that. It's inconsistent with everything else they've done.
I use the iPhone and an Android phone, and I've just come to accept that the Maps experience on the iPhone is inferior because I was just used to turn-by-turn on Android. I mean, I think that that's, Google sort of making, it's like, Maps is better on Android. I think that they're really making that point with this. But, it's interesting. I spent a lot of time in the hospital this past week taking care of my daughter, and I was overhearing the nurses talking about the new iPhone. And these obviously people not working, didn't work in technology, and it was fascinating because, they're like, oh, Dr. So-and-so got the new iPhone 5. Did you see it yet? Oh, it's bigger. It's faster. And then one of them said, yeah, but I heard Google's not on it.
Ooh.
What am I going to do without Google on my phone? I can't be without Google on my phone. This was like word for word. And I was really surprised, that they were conflating Maps and Google Search. She was saying, how am I going to get anywhere?
It's always really interesting to hear normal people talk.
Oh, fascinating. But they were really excited about the iPhone 5, like really excited about it. Oh, it's new. We're going to see it. And, apparently this doctor always has the new toys. So they was like, oh, has she been through yet? We want to see it. So excitement, but also just this, I heard Google's not on it. What does that mean? I don't think that Google has a universal policy about which platform they release for first. I think Google's a huge company with lots of different teams. And I think that they just, that those teams make decisions about which platform to launch first on kind of independently. Also, there's Apple's approval process, which we know can be really protracted, for Google products. So they might work on the iOS app, sooner in some cases and later in others. Though I have to say, I agree. They should have had a Google Maps app kind of in their back pocket, native app in their back pocket done already. And I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised if they do. And if that isn't. Did they make a statement about this, that it's not going to be out for the next few months? Is that
they haven't said anything.
Eric
Schmidt's been said some fairly opaque things, like, well, it's Apple's decision. What can we do? And we would like to be everywhere. And of course, Google has said you can always use the web page. It works. Just bookmark it onto your homepage. In fact, that's what Tim Cook also said.
Yeah.
Right.
I don't know. Google has been pretty opaque about what its plans are.
Yeah, it seems like in the meantime, the story is going to be, if you want a great Maps experience, you get an Android phone. And I wouldn't be surprised if that app showed up in the App Store in the next few weeks.
Mike, why haven't they so what is our consensus? Are they writing one? Have they written one? Are they holding
back? I don't know. Yeah, who knows what they're doing, but I think that they've made a decision and they had some reason for that decision they haven't told us about. Could be that if they told us the decision, we go, that makes a lot of sense.
Right.
Could be that we'd be outraged. We don't know about that. But the larger issue actually these doctors and nurses you overheard are actually kind of onto something, because both Google and Apple and other companies are headed for this world where instead of having all these apps all over the place where you individually go and search and browse and pan around on a map and get results on a search engine, you're going to talk to a Siri-like virtual assistant. In all these cases, Google Now, Siri, other people are going to have these things. And they're just going to give you answers. So they're kind of all jockeying for position for this new world of having everything. And they're still going to be using search and maps and all these other services, they're just going to be invisible behind the service, the surface, just like they are on Siri. So, for example, Siri uses Google, but not the advertising for Google. And Siri uses all these other services that are actually replaceable. You can swap out, you know, if Apple wanted to, they could just toss out Google Search, throw in Bing, and you'd still be using Siri. And so, you know, there's a lot of this kind of jockeying for position for this new world of virtual assistant technology where all the answers are just handed to you. And people want to own the part of it where they're harvesting personal information. They're harvesting the information about where you are and what you're buying and what you're doing and all this stuff, because that's really where the money is in this new sort of context sensitive advertising. So it's hard to parse out which part of this is jockeying for position and which part of it is the thermonuclear war against Google and which part of it is just how the chips are falling.
According to Walt Mossberg today in allthingsd.com, Google will announce Thursday that it is adding Street View to the web version of Google Maps that you use on the iPhone and the iPad, which to me is Google saying, shoot, quick, fix the web app. And then he says, I tested this edition, which displays 360-degree photographic street views of select locations and interior photographic views of certain businesses, ours, using sample links Google sent me. So Google has gone to Walt Mossberg and say, no, look, we're going to add this on Thursday. He says, cagily, I also believe Google is working on a new Google Map app for the Apple platform that would be offered as an additional download. My guess is somebody at Google said, and by the way, the app's coming.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like.
Yep. He does this all in the context of his review of Google Maps on Android, in which he says is mature, powerful. He loved it.
It's definitely the thing I miss the most with the iPhone, for sure.
Yeah. Interesting. See, I don't use it that much. And even the Apple Maps where we are in the Bay Area are just fine. I mean, it's not, they're not inadequate. But, in some areas, I understand that they are. And I use other apps like Waze, which I love, which is on both Android and iPhone, and is a crowdsourced turn-by-turn directions system that's great. So I'm not sure I miss Google Maps that much.
Yeah, I should really use Waze more. I always want the turn-by-turn directions, and I just launch maps, and then I'm like, oh, I got to look at this map. You know, I want tell me to turn left.
It's a good point because, of course, when you use Siri on the Google, on the iPhone, it immediately launches Apple's maps. Siri does not have a direct connect.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's occurring to me that it's kind of the DuckDuckGo of maps, or perhaps DuckDuckGo would be a good brand for the new Apple Maps. Did you see the New Yorker cover remake as done by Apple Maps?
Mad Magazine.
Mad Magazine did it, yeah.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
I hope Mad puts that on the cover of their next issue. Let me see if I can find it. But, the New Yorker's like always done this. The New Yorker's always published, the New Yorker's view of the country, and it's always New York, and then the rest of the country's, kind of over there.
L.A.
L.A. Yeah, right. So
it's on the rundown.
Yeah, I'll try another link here. I'm frozen solid.
I do think it's worth noting that the whole Maps debacle did not go the way Apple planned it to go.
Yes,
and it's been a horrible PR black eye, and really it's really a bad thing now, within just coming near the 1 year anniversary of Steve Jobs' death, that they seem to be stumbling and fumbling and making a lot of mistakes. They had some mistakes with some advertising that they did, where they came out with these weird, Apple Genius ads that kind of hit with a thud. They pulled them and then denied that they pulled them because they were horrible. There's a bunch of stuff like that that just feels like, it doesn't feel like they're a disastrous company. They feel like an ordinary company lately, making these big blunders of the kind that maybe they did and maybe they didn't make before, but without the reality distortion field to make it all good again. It's really, they're looking like a
normal
company and a good but normal company that makes blunders.
They make mistakes, but they always, I could think of hundreds of Apple mistakes. Anybody who thinks Apple doesn't make mistakes is not paying attention. And from the Cube to Ping, we have plenty of examples of Apple stumbling. So
their successes are so stellar, though.
Right. When they do it right, they do it right. And, those nurses aren't far wrong from a fashion point of view. From, that's that. And I think that's what sells the iPhone at this point. It's not technological excellence. It's beautiful. Mm-hmm. It's a it's and well that isn't that what Apple does? They do hardware. It's beautiful. Whoops. Oh. Don't drop
it. It was beautiful. Now it's scratched.
It's too thin and too light. That's why you drop it. Yeah.
Actually, the funny thing is, you know, everybody always raves about how good looking these are and then puts it in a case that makes it look like a 1950s appliance. Yeah.
I do. Yeah. My one iOS 6, I haven't gotten the iPhone 5. I have the 4S, and I just upgraded to iOS 6. My one sort of gripe about it, and this is just because I've been taking tons of pictures of the baby, is that I keep getting this iCloud, you're running out of storage, upgrade your iCloud storage prompt. Like, every single time I pick up my phone, like, I'm trying to take a video of my newborn, and I have, like, manager storage settings prompt.
Yeah.
It's so frustrating.
Yeah. That's why computers don't belong on TVs, toasters, or cameras.
It's true.
Because that's what computers do, is they annoy you.
They annoy you, yeah.
I have a smart TV that kept asking me to log into Facebook. I'm watching TV. I don't want to log into Facebook.
Right.
It's just...
I don't want smart anything.
No,
I
dumb.
I want my things to be dumb.
I'm looking for a complete, backlash, and everybody's going to start using Western Electric. Here's the picture from The New Yorker. Now using Apple Maps, and of course, it's all confused. They've got the Champs-Élysées going down the middle of Manhattan, then the Sea of Galilee leading to the equator and Kuala Lumpur.
And then the Mississippi River.
In the middle right there, yeah. It's pretty good, Chad. This obviously it's not this bad. But Turkey is next to Las Vegas and Brooklyn. I love it.
As someone from Brooklyn, that's not too.
Yeah, that's good. And the Yukon Territory is just between Brooklyn and Chad.
I hope this doesn't affect the wonderful Mad Magazine iOS app for the iPad. It's fantastic.
No. And by the way, here's an update from Gizmodo. Apparently, our engineering team just gave me this information. We recommend that you angle the camera away from... Oh, this is the purple...
This is the purple haze.
Purple
thing.
Flare.
You're holding it wrong.
Purple flare.
You're holding it wrong. Holy cow. Our engineering team just gave me this information. We recommend that you angle the camera away from the bright light source when taking pictures. The purple flare in the image provided is considered normal behavior for iPhone 5's camera.
As Steve Jobs is crossing a blood vessel in his grave.
I love it. Oh, Lord. Apple will never get over your holding it wrong. Never, ever, ever. All right, so enough of Farhad and the map. I think we've done enough of the mapping.
Yep.
We had to do it.
Let's find a way out of this.
Let's get a. I know I can't. How about an ad? An ad's always the best anchor from which to launch the next topic. And our ad today from Squarespace.com. Everything you need to make an exceptional website. The new Squarespace is here. Squarespace 6 was more than a year in the making because the folks at Squarespace decided to do a total rewrite. Now, let me first say what Squarespace is. It's web hosting and the software on top of it, tightly integrated. And that gives you a really much better experience. It's one of the reasons Squarespace sites never go down. They've got really great, fast, responsive, sophisticated algorithms to make sure the site never goes down, no matter how much traffic you get. But also, you don't have to worry about security because it's automatically patched. It's always up to date. Squarespace sites, to my knowledge, I don't know of any Squarespace site ever getting one of those malware warnings. We get that all the time, even on our site. It's really kind of amazing, exceptional stuff. When you use a new Squarespace 6, one of the features you're going to get is something that's very hot right now in the web design world. It's called responsive design. And it needs to be because it used to be you would have a mobile site distinct from your regular site. You know, this is for big screens, this is for little screens. But now so many people use your sites on mobile that really the best way is to adapt, to have a site that looks great, same site, on any size screen. And that's what Squarespace is now doing. So when you upload an image, for instance, to squarespace.com, you'll upload one image that they make 7 different versions out of, one a size for every different possible screen, from the iPhone to a 27-inch monitor. When you design your site using the drag and drop, or even if you use CSS and JavaScript, the design automatically reflows to fit the screen that you're on. It's just so elegant, so modern. By the way, their templates, totally modern, too. Take a look at those. You can go to squarespace.com, take a tour, and if you'd like to try it free, you can. Just they have a right on the front page there, the Get Started button. That'll actually start you at the beginning with the templates. You can select a template. You can change it. This is so cool. They've completely separated content from design so that kind of like CSS Zen Garden does. So, you know, you create your design, start loading content, and any time you just click a new design and boom, everything reflows into that design. I just think they've done such a good job. Try it free for 2 weeks. You don't need a credit card. You don't need any personal information except your email address, and you're good to go. If you decide to buy, there are two different plans. There's the basic plan, and there's the unlimited plan. Starts at $8 a month when you buy a year. But, you know, for $16 a month, you get unlimited pages, galleries, and blogs, unlimited bandwidth, unlimited storage, unlimited contributors. They'll give you a custom domain name when you sign up for a year on any on either plan. So if you want to have at a RebeccaBailey.com, you could. They wire that up. They give it to you for free, and then they wire it up so that it goes right to your Squarespace site. The form builder, MailChimp sync, complete integration of all the social networks. $16 a month. Now, here's the deal. If you decide you want to do that, I would use the offer code TWIG10. TWIG and 10 for the 10th month, because that'll give you 10% off whatever your first purchase is. So do the year-long purchase so you get the most bang for your buck. I think Squarespace is fantastic, and I know you're going to want to try it. And it's perfect if you have a newborn or some special event like a newlywed. You know, well, I'll give you an example. Ryan Block and Veronica Belmont just got married, and they initially, Ryan was telling me on Twitter, they went to like a site that does wedding, you know, a provider that does wedding sites. And it was terrible. So Veronica said, let's just do it on Squarespace. So their Blockmont site, it was on Squarespace. And it's just the easiest thing in the world. And it's perfect for a one-off occasion like that. Squarespace.com.
You know, Leo, one of the things that is least, I've become a Squarespace user recently. And it's amazing. It's like super amazing. One of the things that's least appreciated about it is the way support works. In all the web-based stuff that I've used in the past, you click on support, and it drops you off into this knowledge base that kind of says, well, good luck. Maybe you can find it because you'll never find our phone number or email address. And they always try to make you go through this sort of crucible to get to the actual support, even if you know that your question is not going to be in the knowledge base. On Squarespace, you hit support, and it says, just ask us a question. And you just send them an email, and they send you an answer. It's amazing.
Yeah. Great 24/7 support. Yep.
Yeah.
Somebody, Squarespace, try it, Twig 10. Somebody just told me that Mitt Romney's doing a Google Plus Hangout right now, pre-debate, or is that going to be later?
Really?
Somebody mentioned that in the chat room.
He's doing it from Chipotle, I think. that's actually one of the interesting things. I don't know if that's true or not, but one of the interesting things that's happening in this debate is while a debate is going on, other people are going to be I don't want to say heckling, but making commentary live during the debate. One of them is Gary Johnson, who's the Libertarian candidate, and sued the organization who's holding the debates for excluding him. So he feels that he should have been included in the debates, and he was not. So instead of just being silent during the debates, he's actually going to be, you know, kind of like Mystery Science Theater. He's going to be sitting there, you know, making comments throughout the entire debate. There's also Reason Magazine, I think, is going to do that. So it's kind of an interesting new world of debates where the whole point of a debate used to be that the candidates that were, you know, the anointed candidates of the two parties had a monopoly on the nation's attention. But now that we have social media, and especially video social media like Google Plus Hangouts, you're going to have other people throwing in their voices and having a critical eye at what's going on in real time. So it's going to be a really interesting election.
Well, that turns the Democratic response upside down, right? Do it yep. in real time. So this is, exactly. In fact, if you follow Mitt Romney on Google+, right there at the top is of his feed, Debate Night Hangout. Now, he's not in there right now.
He's not.
But Romney for America people are. And I wonder if he might stop by. I mean, he's got some more important things to do.
They also announced a bunch of Twitter handles. After the debates you had with the idiot structure of the spin room where you go and you listen to the two sides spin what you just heard as if you can't decide yourself. Well, the spin room is now Twitter. So Romney's staff, to also respond to what Mike was talking about, will be putting out their spin on Twitter, as obviously Obama's staff will, the same as we'll all, we citizens will be all saying it the same, and we'll get drowned in spin.
Yeah. What Romney meant to say just there was that he...
There have been some great hashtags this week that when Romney was supposedly off rehearsing his zingers and trying to find zingers. So now Romney zinger is a good hashtag. A lot of speculative hangers.
Well, you know, on the one hand, I celebrate the fact that there are these unmediated channels for a candidate or a campaign to talk to voters, because I think that's great. I mean, unmediated is fantastic. Yep. But on the other hand, there is an even better facility now for voters who don't want to hear the other side just to say, well, I'm going to follow this hashtag. And and then I'll only, you know, I'm in my own spin room.
Yeah, but the echo chamber argument. But I think, Leo, that what happens is you'll find people in that hashtag arguing with people in the opposing hashtag unless you have some sense of that opposing hashtag.
Right. And, you know, I'm, of course, am following both candidates, hoping to see germane tweets from them. Romney only has, I'm kind of surprised, 1.2 million followers on Twitter. What is President Obama has something like 10 million or something.
I think he's
he has a lot, and a lot of them are fake. A lot of both candidates
that's
are
right.
fake.
That's right.
Remember that.
In fact, that's right. Wasn't that the case that they analyzed that Mitt had a huge jump on one day of something like 20,000?
Yeah, and most of those people, or a big percentage of those people, had been using Twitter for something like 4 days.
Yeah, and didn't have a profile picture. President Obama's account...
20 million.
20 million.
And then the White House account has 3.1 million.
Right. It's interesting. They are debating on Twitter, or their proxies are debating on Twitter. That's very interesting. Although not as much stuff going... Well, yeah. Interesting.
There's a whole list of things that I want to hear on the debate tonight, including, you know, well, Google it, Mitt.
Do you think you will? I don't know.
I don't know. Wouldn't it be great if we got some kind of techno-savvy moment?
There is a debate drinking game at debatedrinking.com, but I don't see Google in here. But I wouldn't...
Mama should just send a chair.
I wouldn't be surprised if... this will be a good measure. Look, this is clearly every campaign, every 4 years, it's more and more influenced by the internet and digital and technology.
Yep.
I wouldn't be surprised at all to see some references to, certainly you'll see Twitter references, right?
Yep.
What an interesting idea in a debate to say what you have to say and say, hey, if you're interested in more, I've got a page with this.
Right.
Do you think the candidates might do that, push people to
the
websites?
Oh, yeah, they'll push to a URL, sure, but yeah.
Well, remember, who was it? Was it Ralph Nader kept saying his 800 number in his
website?
Yeah.
Or, you know, there's other phrases like, well, as I was saying on Twitter, Mr. President.
I'll be listening for that. I don't think we'll hear that. I think that this...
Or it could be, well, I was just reading what a citizen had to say on Twitter, Mr. President. I mean, I think there's moments like that when they want to be cool.
Right. We'll be watching for that with great interest.
There's also an interesting thing that CNN is apparently doing, that they're going to allow people to spin out clips and then share it on social media in real time, replay things, and essentially give people the tools to spin out memes as they happen. Wow. So in other words, instead of people just talking about what did he just say that? What did he just say? You'll be able to just attach a video and off it goes, a link to that.
Wow. I remember 4 years ago, there was a lot of controversy that the networks were not allowing clips of the debates to go up, or you had to go to their site, watch the whole thing.
Yeah, boy, that's
this
terrible.
Is opening up. That'd be good.
Yeah.
It's our damn future.
Yeah. Being allowed to broadcast this debate as a privilege, and this doesn't belong to you. It belongs to the people. I wonder what Facebook's going to do.
On YouTube.
I wonder what is it going to be broadcast live on YouTube?
Yes. Wow. First time.
Oh, nice.
Wow. Boy, I tell you, everything is now being broadcast. The Olympics are broadcast live on YouTube. The conventions are broadcast live on YouTube. Now the debate broadcast live on YouTube. YouTube really
Romney
is...
Romney better not mention Chipotle. Are they going to pull the whole thing?
Wow, that's interesting. Very interesting. I wonder how many people will watch it on YouTube versus watching it on TV.
It'll be tiny.
Tiny?
But I think it makes a big statement.
Hmm.
And, you know, the question, but I think what Mike just said about the ability to go in and send clips around and that kind of stuff, you need that added functionality to beat the convenience of television as a reason to use the medium.
Right. Yeah. Let's see. Google passes Microsoft's market value.
Last week, we said that Google was the fifth largest company and the third largest tech company, and now it's number two tech company.
Wow. By rising 1%, its stock market value went to $761 a share at the close, giving it a market capitalization at the end of the day yesterday of $250 billion.
I think it's interesting to look at the rise of Google's share price because I think it's the, you know, my gut feeling is that it's Wall Street's acceptance of the new Larry version of Google.
Yes.
He's cutting a lot of underperforming and, mm-hmm. and peripheral mm-hmm. properties. He's doing all those things that he should do, and He's running the company really well. I think the comparison with Microsoft, though, is loopy. It doesn't make any sense. I mean,
well,
Microsoft
only because
has
of ranking, Mike, I think.
Well, yeah, but I mean, this is kind of like talking about the iPhone 3 weeks before the iPhone ships. There's always this dip. I mean, Microsoft is coming in toward the end of a period where it's got an old operating system, old versions of Office, all that kind of stuff. And, you know, I think there's a reasonably good chance that after Windows 8 ships and after they sort of like, you know, sort of reconstitute themselves as they do occasionally, you know, they could surpass Google again. And it really there's no connection really between Microsoft's business and Google's business. You know, Bing, for example, is not a significant part of Microsoft's revenue.
No, in fact, it's really a drain on revenue. They're huge amount of money they pour into online.
Yeah,
but so if you look at the two companies, yeah, it doesn't make any sense.
Since 2000, Microsoft stock has held pretty much, you know, between 20 and 40 bucks. It's been very consistent. I'm looking at the chart right now. Not much has happened there. Google has really, you know, they are tech companies. They are different models. Google really has seen a distributed model that Microsoft couldn't imagine. And now we have, you know, Microsoft trying to copy Google and doing things like phones. And other services, you know, they're still, I think, struggling to find their place in this world. And one of the stories in the rundown is that Microsoft is going to start a new news service when it gave up MSNBC in the sale to NBC.
I put that in just for you.
Yeah, now they're done. Not only doing that, one of my former editors when I worked at Advanced Publications, Dean Betts is there, and the way he put it to me was not that they were adding website for news. He's there to edit news for Windows 8.
Ooh.
They're adding content into the OS.
Hmm. Yeah, they have a great little news tile, actually. It's actually really nicely done.
Right.
And it's by default on the front page of all Windows 8 devices, the tablets, the phones, as well as the desktops. And it's already beautiful. And when you use it full screen... It's actually a gorgeous looking newspaper. That's it. So that's what the news operation is designed
for. So they're hiring, you know, human editors, unlike Google News, and they are licensing full scale content, Reuters and AP and such. And they're going to try to create a content business again. They've tried again and again in the past, and it might be great, but it just kind of I think it indicates, Mike, that Microsoft is you could view it two ways, flailing a bit or stagnant a bit.
Yeah, I mean, it's so frustrating with Microsoft because they have so many cool things that they could really turn into monsters. I mean, you look at Kinect and all the potential there is in Kinect.
Okay,
you
that's look the grand Pixel- exception that everybody raises. Name two.
Well, okay, here's another one. Microsoft Pixel Sense, which is their gigantic iPad. You know, this thing has been, you know, they acquired Perceptive Pixel, which was the other big screen you know, gigantic thing. And they, and they're kind of doing these, they're using this technology, which is breathtakingly good, for vertical things, for casinos and nightclubs and retail and stuff like that. We really need big, 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 bold things out of Microsoft. Like, for example, coming out with a big Pixel Sense table for consumers. You know, charge us, charge $4,000 or even $5,000 for it, but come out with something that runs Windows 8, that's a big, gigantic touch table. I mean, do something really bold like that. Do something really bold with Kinect. I mean, they're going to have a Kinect for Windows 8 for the desktop, which I think is fantastic, but they're not quite connecting. There's some really leading-edge technology with the broader consumer marketplace in the way that Apple is so good at doing. So it's just frustrating that they have all these little things that are great. I mean, the Windows phones are great. The Surface looks promising. But let's speed it up here, guys. This is a new world, and you can't just like drag your feet for years. I mean, Ballmer was talking about a consumer version of what was then called the Surface, now called Pixel Sense. What was that, 2 years ago? He was saying, yeah, we're on the edge of coming out with a consumer version. I haven't heard a word. I guess maybe that turned into the Surface tablet.
That's probably what he meant, yeah.
Yeah.
I think that the news operation is probably considered kind of de minimis for Microsoft. It's just that, well, we have the real estate on the screen. Why not take advantage of it?
And give some value back.
Give some value back. And I wouldn't be surprised if there's some bigness in there.
But, you know, this goes back to my thinking about the Chromebook today, and I know you both laugh at me because it's you know, meant for grandmas, but would it be possible to live fully in Google? What's left of my Microsoft life? Just Word. That's it.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And the only reason I use Word is because my editors insist that I use Word.
It's
and
a legacy app.
Reason.
It's become a legacy
app.
That's
it. Is a legacy app.
Although I have to say, in accounting, our staff needs Excel and uses Excel. So the spreadsheet may stay vital in business.
But, of course, I don't add. I'm a journalist, so I don't need to do that.
Right.
And the other thing, I'm about to call my broker and sell my Microsoft to buy Facebook.
Really? Is that because Facebook's so low?
Yeah.
Why not?
And Microsoft has been stagnant. I've been living at $35 Microsoft for and not that I have much, folks. I don't. But just as a way to kind of keep track on the industry, it's a way to make me look it up every day. And Microsoft's at $30.
By the way, in this same article, Microsoft also says that it hired a former CBS executive to run a studio generating content for the Xbox. So, Mike, you might have something there. It might be that Microsoft is thinking, here's a way to use our platforms and to get some more value out of them.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that what they all should be doing and what some of them are really trying to do, Apple's certainly trying to do it, is to have the soup to nuts thing through something, iCloud or something like it.
And Apple really doesn't do content. They sell other people's content. I mean, they do a little. Okay, content. There's the iTunes concerts they do in September, but that's about it.
Yeah, I mean, they don't do it yet. There's so many of these barriers that are being broken. You know, Google bought Motorola.
Right.
You know, there's all these strange things that these areas that you'd think, well, that company doesn't do that. Everybody's like trampling those barriers. And so, you know, I think Apple will be happy to make content if it makes sense for them. Google is doing it. Yahoo's doing it.
Google does not doing content. They're not owning and creating content. They remain a platform for it. They would be in channel conflict. Apple would be in channel conflict.
No. You're wrong. They spend $150 million on YouTube channels creating contents for YouTube, they're going to do another $200 million in the fall.
They don't own them. They don't own them, Leo. They invested in them. They want to encourage it, which is just
That's a very good point. And in fact, I was surprised to hear those contract deals do not, in fact, give them ownership of the content.
Just like ING underwriting soap operas or Northern Exposure. They want more stuff there. They need more stuff there. And so the way they get it is to invest in it. But they do not want to find themselves in channel conflict.
Good.
With the likes of us. And I think that's right. So, and I think Apple's in the same boat. Whereas content has been the strategy of Yahoo. We'll see if it stays that under Marissa. And it is the sole strategy of AOL.
And apparently Microsoft, maybe. Although it could just be.
Microsoft has gotten it, tried to get into it before. You know, they started.
Besides MSNBC, what else? MSN.
Slate.
Slate.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
So this is not new for Microsoft.
It's not new. It's always been kind of a little
side business. It's a side business. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
It's
yeah.
a sideshow.
Sideshow.
It's basically somebody says we have all these people who don't change their homepages, and we have a potential of a quote unquote right. fire hose. Yahoo's favorite phrase.
Right.
AOL's too. And so where do we point it? We got to have something to point it at, which will benefit us. And so back in the day, I was one of many who did deals with Microsoft, or was around them rather, for content companies. Said, we'll point the fire hose at you. What's it worth to you? And you want to get wet?
Can I not have them pointed at me? How much is that worth? Google, you talked about Larry Page and spring cleaning. Google is, we're still waiting to hear about Feedburner. I don't know why they haven't said anything, have they? But the strong impression people have that Feedburner is going to be going away.
Dead man walking.
Dead man walking. Yeah. And one indicator is that they have killed AdSense for feeds. Which is pretty much the way Feedburner monetizes. So maybe they will stop Feedburner. I don't know, Peel. There's a lot of people rely on Feedburner to create their feeds.
Remember when we all wrote blogs and used Feedburner?
A lot of podcasts use Feedburner, actually.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. That's true.
I actually use Feedburner, too, because what I do is I automatically publish my Google Plus feed as a newsletter, and I use Feedburner as part of that process because I get an RSS feed from a generator. There's these different companies that will spin out, give you an RSS feed of your Google Plus feed. But that doesn't work with MailChimp, which is what I use to send the newsletter. So I kind of launder it through Feedburner. And so I don't know where else I'll do that. I'm sure there's some other place to do it. But what I don't understand is why would Google want to kill this thing? It doesn't seem like it's a high maintenance service.
But Mike, you've been pointing out various times, they've killed it. That's not the equation. The equation is this business beneficial for Google or not? And they're killing things that are small and harmless, but they're getting rid of them. Here's another question for you. Is this a window onto Dick Costolo's brain, right? Because Dick was the CEO of Feedburner. I never understood a business model for Feedburner. Dick's the CEO of Twitter. I still don't understand Twitter.
Maybe Dick Costolo is the problem. So the evidence that they're going to kill Feedburner is that there is no longer a Feedburner Google Plus account. There is no longer a Feedburner Twitter account. And the API feed was taken offline. And now they've chopped off its ability to monetize. I have a feeling that this is death by a thousand cuts. They're slowly
I don't know what I'm going to do. Do you know any alternatives? Because that's where my RSS feed for the blog goes.
All right. Well, here's a call out to Gina and all you programmers. We need a Feedburner replacement stat.
Yeah. It's so funny. I use Feedburner for my blog, too, but I just I never look at it. I mean, I guess I'm just going to use the WordPress, whatever. My CMS is just raw feed. I guess Feedburner gives you those stats about how many people are subscribed.
Yeah, but I don't use them. When was the last time you looked, Gina?
I don't remember.
5 years, 6 years?
Yeah, a long time. I mean, a long time. Remember when the little bug, the Feedburner bug with how many, subscribers that you have was so popular? My concern is that this means that the Google's kind of doesn't care about RSS as much anymore, which means that, maybe Reader won't be around as much. I'm just kind of worried that the old school days of newsreaders and RSS feeds might be over. Maybe I shouldn't be worried. Maybe that's a good thing.
I've
always been kind of hostile about it in Chrome. You go to a RSS, most browsers, you just paste in an RSS, XML link, and it just shows it to you. In Chrome, it's all, you should download a plugin.
Right.
It's like I never understood their hostility to that format. RSS is good.
I
wonder what Dave Weiner has to say about
this. Make it 4 out of 4 now. We all use Feedburner. I just realized I use Feedburner on my blog too to make for an email version. They make an email out of
that's
it.
That's right. I forgot that.
That's why they're dragging their tail on actually killing the actual
Feedburner. Yes.
Because you start pulling the thread out of the internet and it's like everybody's using this thing.
We can't understand. We can't understand you. I don't know why.
Getting a transmission from the Martian rover.
Really?
I think you're back. Yeah.
Oh, by the way, this email subscription to my blog. Let me see how many subscribers I have. Oh, zero. I've been doing that for 5 years, and I have zero.
I mean,
you could increase that by 300% right now if we all signed up.
No, don't, because who knows how long it'll last.
Well, but Leo, that's your tech guy audience, isn't it? Well, I guess they'd be more likely to use an email newsletter, though.
I am puzzled. Zero subscribers, zero reach. Earn money, it says, from all that traffic. They still are advertising AdSense for feeds, even though they've killed it. Well, I must be doing something wrong. That's so. I might as well take that block out of my blog. How funny! What if I subscribe now? It's not that I put anything on my blog anymore, but maybe they killed FeedBurner and no one noticed. Wouldn't that be funny?
Well, what Gina's point was before, you're right though. Imagine the day after when you go to Reader.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I'm concerned about Reader in general. FeedBurner has to help Google do some really cool stuff with Reader, right? Like some good optimizations, and they have data about what's going on with those feeds through FeedBurner. If they get rid of FeedBurner, does that mean that they're going to get rid of Google Reader eventually too? Like, are we kind of, is this Google saying we're, if this happens, are we in a post RSS world? Is it all going to be Google Plus?
But that doesn't work for so much stuff.
Yeah.
Yep. I know. I know it.
And email doesn't work. Email is the brokenest of feeds.
Well, how many of you go through a newsreader every day? Like
I use RSS Flipboard reader. Now instead of a newsreader.
Yeah. Okay. Jeff and Mike, do you guys use a?
I use it for my ego stuff.
Uh huh. Okay.
Right. Starting off there, what's there? I use it for certain feeds. I used to have about 100 feeds. Now I probably go through half dozen.
And you look at it every day? You check your feeds every day? Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Currents? Anybody use Currents?
You know, when I was at Google, I said something about, I should use Currents more. And nobody said, yes, you should. They all kind of shrugged.
That's sad.
I think they don't know what Currents is.
It's a nice little app, but it's not FeedBurner.
It looks nice as an app, yeah.
FeedBurner is really, not FeedBurner, Flipboard is really the thing.
It's nice.
Yeah. I really like Flipboard. And it's kind of like reading your feeds, except that the feed's coming from Twitter, not from RSS. I don't know.
Right.
I don't understand, but Gina can probably explain. Google wants to make your site a little bit faster with its new tag manager.
Yes, please explain.
Well, I don't know what the hell that means. I read it. I still don't understand it. Would you explain it?
I read it too, and this is kind of a weird product that I'm not totally sure I understand. This is what I think it does. So the idea is that when you run a site, you drop in a bunch of little widgets and tags for marketing metrics and analytics and ads and things like that. And Google's saying that those things slow down your web page when it loads. So from what I understand, Tag Manager is, and I hope Googlers and people in the chat room will correct me if I get this wrong, is that it's a way to set up all those tags through Google and then just put that tag, tag meaning like the HTML markup in your page, and that routes it through Google and that speeds up your page.
So they're caching.
It just provides, makes it faster. And I think also it means that people in marketing don't have to go to the web developer to say, hey, can you just drop this new widget onto every page in the site? But it also just gives a web front end to marketing folks to do that on their own through Google. That's what I think it does. But it's really weird. I mean, it's not just you, Leo. Like the description of the product is weird. It's a little weirdly vague.
Let me read it from the Google Tag Manager page. Why use Google Tag Manager? Google Tag Manager is free and easy, leaving more time and money to spend on your marketing campaigns. You manage your tags yourself with easy-to-use web interface rather than forcing you or your IT department to write or rewrite site code. Maybe marketers understand that.
Yeah, so I think it's just a way to say, we're dropping in code. These are all our marketing and analytics tags, and now our marketing department can just manage them through Google instead of having a message.
So it's some sort of analytics.
And does Google learn all that stuff as it passes through?
Oh, yeah. Available? Google gets a lot of information.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's what's really interesting about this, right? And it works with services which are not in Google as well. So, yeah, you're basically routing through Google for other services.
I guess what I don't know is, what is a tag? What do they mean when they say tag?
I this is a really weird name. From what I think
it's not what we think it is.
It's a snippet of JavaScript or an iframe or, you know, like those little bits of code that we add to the bottom of our pages to do analytics or to get, you know, more information. I think
Google Analytics is a tag.
Google Analytics, for example, right, would be a tag, right? Right.
I do not think that word means what you think it means.
Remember back in the day when there were ping services? You had something new
on
your site.
Not Apple Ping, but...
No.
You know, we just had this conversation because there's no way to let iTunes know that you've updated the feed anymore. You used to be able to ping them and say, hey, the feed's new. Would you reload?
Right.
You can't do that anymore.
Right.
They took it out.
And so the problem was that you had all kinds of RSS servers and such. This is all RSS related. It's very related to the previous topic. Trying to constantly go to servers. So instead, there was the creation. Dave Winder was involved in this. Where you would ping out and it would ping everybody for you.
Right.
And that got bought by, I think, VeriSign back in the day. Because that was going to be really valuable. You knew where all the fresh content was. And Google scaled that by just saying, oh, heck, we'll just check everywhere every 10 seconds, you know.
You're not thinking of Ping FM. That's something else.
That was something else.
Yeah.
This was so that you could update all kinds of feed servers that you had new content. This is how old I am in this business, children. I remember ping services.
I do, too. No, that was something we used as podcasters. When you posted a feed, you would ping all these different places and let them know.
I'm sensing the tag things like that. Yes, Gina, that you ping once to notify many.
Yes.
And here you tag once to get analytics in many.
Right, one tag on the site, and then you can manage those in Google's web interface. Yeah, I think that it is like that. But I haven't signed up for it. It seems this is more like for marketing departments, for, you know, companies with huge websites that are constantly adding different tags for various services.
Here's the other interesting thing I wonder about this, and I guess I don't understand tags at all. Is each tag,
you're not alone,
in essence,
Jeff,
putting on a cookie? Did I do it again?
No.
Oh. In other words, does this unify the cookie too? Because if each analytics, each tracker, let's say you're on Omniture and Google Analytics and one other, right? If you're going to unify those three tags, have you unified the cookies that each of those is placing on the users? And thus, does Google really have a lot of information coming in? And is there a privacy issue?
Yeah, that's a good question.
No,
I would think so. I mean, it sounds like Tag Manager does associate the various tags from different third parties into one, right? That's the value of the service. So, yeah, it sounds like Google would have a lot more information about your site that you're sending.
It would be easier if we just use the word snippet, code snippet, because that's really what it is. It's a snippet of code that Google is caching on your behalf.
I imagine it's just a piece of HTML.
Yeah.
The chat room MXX, who has a lot of good answers about these questions coming by, says each tag is a cookie, but Google Tags does not unify them.
Okay, I'm going to move on.
I'm confused. I give up.
Okay, I thought that I would get clarity out of this. Now I'm even more confused. It's something to do with SEO.
it's about speed.
It's about speed.
It's about speed, but MX might be right. That maybe it doesn't unify them. It does sound like you associate the tags, though, all in one place and say, this is my site. So I don't know.
Well, I'm against it.
Cookie tracking industry.
That's my position.
I'm
against the whole thing.
I don't know what it is, but I'm against it. Google warns of new state-sponsored cyber attacks. In fact, if you go to many people, if they go to their inbox on Gmail or your Google homepage or your Chrome browser, you might see this warning. Warning! We believe state-sponsored attackers may be attempting to compromise your account or computer. I had somebody call me on the radio show this weekend saying, what the hell is that? The company said it started alerting users to malicious activity on their computers in June, it's picked up thousands more instances of cyber attacks than it anticipated. This must be related to the malware monitoring that they do. And it turns out that they believe many of these are state-sponsored. So tens of thousands of users starting Tuesday afternoon have been receiving this warning.
How can I get a state sponsor?
Wow. that's a sign. That's a sign of that you're important. China's going after you.
I mean, I think I really do think that they're mostly concerned about China. They don't want to use the C word, and also to a lesser extent,
no.
Russia. But they're talking about the Middle East. That was a denial of service attack.
It says that the Iran, Qatar, and the UAE and Bahrain have used spyware to monitor citizens and activists overseas. And then American banks were hit with cyber attacks by hackers claiming Middle Eastern ties last week. So it's not just DDoSing.
Yeah.
It's hacking. So I haven't seen this warning. None of us have received this warning.
Nope.
Nope. Says,
your account could be at risk.
You're doing something wrong.
Yes.
I'm not important enough.
Huh. Anybody in the chat room receive this? They start pushing them out on Tuesday.
Then the next thing is for hackers to spoof state sponsorship somehow.
All you need is a .cn address, and you're good to go.
Like privacy stuff. We'll have things advertised soon, cyber terrorism watch. We'll keep your children safe and make sure they're never cyber terrorized.
From Matt Cutts, the word that the +1 does not affect your search rankings.
And even some fairly blunt, honest language about how it's not a very good signal of quality.
I love that, Matt. He was in a hangout, power searching with Google hangout on air number 2. He said, quote, in the short term, we're still going to have to study and see how good the signal is. So right now, there is not really a direct effect where if you have a lot of +1s, you'll rank higher. But there are things like we have an authorship proposal where you can use nice standards to mark up your web page and you'll actually see a picture. We've been doing that. I've done that, certainly. I don't know if that's XFN or what they're doing, but you see a picture of the author. And it turns out, if you see a picture of the author, sometimes you have a higher click-through, and people will say, oh, that looks like a trusted resource. So there are ways you can participate.
They want signals of quality
and signals of trust. Sure that they click through.
I am an untrusted resource. But if you Google Leo Laporte, there will be, in the Google results, some results that have a picture of me. Those are the ones that I've said, these are my pages. Right. So
it's
there
fantastic.
It is. It's my
the
blog.
Thing.
Yeah.
I actually convinced all of my editors to implement it. They're mostly thinking about it anyway on the sites, because what was happening was, because of the tie-in with Google Plus and Google Plus profiles, the post that I would do to promote my work on other sites was having a higher rank than the destination site. And because of the author thing, and my picture was there, and then the actual article is further down with no picture.
Right.
And so now that they've implemented that, actually Google Results now puts the destination site on top with my picture, and it's a beautiful thing. And my stuff is easier to find. But regarding this +1 thing, +1s are if you +1 something outside of Google Plus, it affects outside of Google Plus. If you +1 it within Google Plus, of course it adds it up, and you can say, oh wow, this thing got 100 +1s, that means it's better than twice as good as something that got 50. But the best use of +1s is actually to save content, because everything you +1 is remembered on Google Plus, and you can go to your profile and look at all the things that you've +1. So if you want to save something for later, just +1 it and it'll be on the list.
But if you And this is one of my gripes. If I go to my +1s on Google Plus, I only see pages that I've +1'd off of Google Plus. Like, I don't see all the Google Plus posts, like inside Plus, that I've +1'd.
Right.
Is there a way to get to those?
No, and isn't that the strange thing?
What's up with that?
Of course you have to be logged in when you're elsewhere to +1'ing things for it to remember that. I think they just don't know what to do with it. I mean, I think they'd like to have it be a search signal, but it would be so easily gamed, and it would mess up search. So I don't know. It's really a strange phenomenon that nobody quite fully understands.
I can't find the pluses. Oh, there they are. +1s. I got it. Okay.
Yes, you can add that tab.
Right.
And I honestly rarely +1 anything not outside of Google Plus.
I just got +Leo Laporte as my URL.
Oh, sweet.
One of the things
you guys probably already have that, but I just noticed that I have it.
One of the things that happens when you +1 something outside of Google Plus is it opens up a box for you to post it on Google Plus.
Yeah.
And I think that's off-putting for people. I think it kind of trains people that, like, you just want to click it, you know, and have it turn red and move on with your life. But instead, it opens this thing and sort of like guilts you into like posting something. And I think they'd be better off if they just had it be a more normal thing and work more like the Facebook like button.
So we've pre-approved this URL for your profile. And then if you agree to the terms of service, you can claim it or you can request a different one. Maybe I could ask to be Gina Trapani.
Oh, no, you can't because I've got that already.
Oh, rats.
Yeah.
You can only have one custom URL. Once you claim it, you can't change or transfer it. Are you sure you want to be plus?
No sex change operation for
years. No, I'm going to be Leo Laporte forevermore.
Not Leo Laporte, Leo.
Not Leah. Or not Helen.
I'm sure you guys have talked about this on previous shows, but it works with multiple versions. So you can do google.me/Leo Laporte, and it works the same.
Or Google, isn't it just google.com?
You can do google.com/Leo Laporte. Google.me/+Leo Laporte.
Yes, that's right, plus. So that's what I'm using on my signature for email. I use Google me plus Mike Elgin.
When no one was looking, I changed everyone's lower third to google.com/their thing.
Nice.
Oh, now you can change mine too.
Well, I didn't do it to yours because I got a 404
it.
Until right
it.
Now.
Yeah.
Did you just claim it?
I can
refresh. Let me
plus dot or just do. It's Leo Laporte. What, yeah, all one word.
It'll.
Maybe it hasn't propagated through the Google sphere.
What's interesting is that Google actually puts the case, so it like uppercases the G and T in my name.
Yeah, that's
and
neat.
URLs are case insensitive. Like, I just, that rubs me the wrong way. I have a hard enough time with the plus, which is actually a URL encoded space. Like, the fact that they've sort of repurposed the plus to be like a different namespace, but they're also adding uppercase.
Oh, dear.
Google.
Yeah, I'm doing it, Google.
URLs are case insensitive.
Yeah.
I mean, it makes them more readable. Fine.
Right. That's
fine.
What it is.
I suppose it makes it better for humans.
Oh, those damn humans. Ruining our algorithmic perfection.
That's not very algorithmic.
I don't know. Google has patented a smartwatch. Somebody said that the Apple missed a bet by not keeping the Nano.
I'm tempted to buy one before they go off sale so I can have a Nano watch.
Yeah, but they'll don't know. Then Peter Rojas, and I think he's smart, of Gadget.com said, oh, no, this is all planned. Next year, they'll introduce the Apple wearable iPod.
I think Peter's exactly right.
I think he nailed it.
And I think they're going to have a watch, and I think everybody's going to have a watch. I think
apparently Google is.
Devices. Yeah, well, I mean, that's a future. That's the watch version of Project Glass.
Yeah, because it has a camera and a clear flip-up cover that can display augmented reality information.
Yeah, but that's not going to be out by Christmas, I can assure you.
And a tactile user interface.
That's a pretty far-fetched, far-off project.
Google, you shouldn't have made it so specific. You should have just patented wearable watches, and then you could own everybody. Dumb. From now on, non-specific patents, okay? New pay-for-engagement ad form. I guess this goes along with tag clouds or whatever the hell.
Well, this is a little bit different. This is a variation on pay per click. It's pay for engagement. You don't pay advertiser unless someone engages with the form.
Wow.
And it's a blow up thing that takes over the screen. And if you do that, then the advertiser's happy and the advertiser pays.
And the user is pissed. So
no, the user supposedly has had a choice and has chosen to engage with this. So the user is...
Yeah, we're trying to find the close box. We're not engaging with it. We're trying to get rid of it.
No, it's the opposite. I think, Leo, I think it's just an ad on the page.
But it's a light boxed ad.
Right. Does clicking the close button count as interaction?
Yeah, I'm interacting with you. I'll get you in action right here. I'm trying to find an example. Yeah. Love this. This is from the Google Inside AdWords blog. When creativity and technology work hand in hand, brands can build amazing things online. Woo!
Poor schmucks who have to write that stuff.
Oh, man. I'm so depressed.
It is really depressing. That sentence is really depressing.
Oh.
The idea of brands building amazing things online is it's depressing.
So instead of seeing an ad on a page, you see a light boxed, you know, basically it's using the light boxing in Google Plus, right? That's the same look.
Mm-hmm. Looks
right,
like it.
True, true. Yeah.
And so just know, folks at home, when you click around in there, man, people are happy about that. They're paying big bucks for that engagement. AOL is now on YouTube?
Yep, they put up all their stuff. Well, don't forget AOL now with Huffington Post. It's Huffington Post. Huffington Post is now video.
So they want distribution. So is it one of the new YouTube channels, or is it an AOL channel?
I think it's everything. I think it's everything that AOL is. I think it's multiple channels.
22 branded channels, including HuffPost Live, TechCrunch, and MoviePhone. TechCrunch on YouTube. So I guess they're making so much video now that they can post these. It's funny because, you know, of course we've got a YouTube channel, but if you're a big corporation, you have to like announce it. YouTube has a Turkish site.
Well, that's a big deal because
they're giving the government control.
Exactly. Turkey has insisted on a .tk site so that it could then tell Google what to take off.
Wow. Because
things that attack Ataturk and such aren't allowed. And they also want taxation money, but Google says we pay taxes in every country we're in already.
Right.
And Turkey's in the news right now as we go on the air because they've shot back at Syria.
Oh, so no. Really?
There are bombs going both ways there.
Right.
And it's likely that I will be in Turkey in about a month.
Great.
So will I.
Give us a report.
Really? Wow.
Hopefully shelling isn't going to come back in the other direction.
That's what I mean. I'm scheduling right now a trip to Azerbaijan and then Istanbul.
Our war correspondent, Jeff Jarvis, is on the scene.
Jesus.
As the bombs are falling. Jeff, are you there? Can you hear me? Facebook wants the like button to be exempt from child privacy laws.
Oh,
well,
boy.
Facebook and Google and Apple and Twitter have all complained to the FTC about the COPPA regulations. Facebook in particular has a problem with like and the restrictions on that because they're saying it's a matter of free speech, that a child has free speech and a child should be able
child
to say
does not have like free this. Speech. Child does not have free speech.
Well, there's some argument about that, but yeah.
The proposal that the Obama administration is considering to beef up child privacy laws could hamper America's ability to like, tweet, and share information across. So what? If you're under 13, you don't have a right to like, tweet, and share information on the web. Do you? It's 13-year-olds. It's not 18-year-olds. It's 13-year-olds we're talking about.
I'd like to see them illegalize the use of the word like for 13-year-olds.
Yeah. Well said, Mike.
The current rules require verifiable parental consent before collecting personal information from children younger than 13.
Oh, man. I'm keeping Ed off of Facebook as long as I can.
Yeah. So Facebook says... And, of course, the like collects information. You have to have a Facebook account and be logged in. But Facebook says you may not have an account if you're under 13, so I'm confused.
Right. Yeah, I am, too. Why are they, you know, first of all, it's weird that this corporation is lecturing the U.S. government on the First Amendment.
Yeah.
Secondly, they're basically claiming the right of free speech to people who are not authorized to use their service.
I'm going to disagree with you, Mike. I think that we absolutely should be lecturing the FTC and government in these cases on free speech, just as broadcast networks had to lecture the FCC on free speech regularly. I think it's the case here. And I also think that what these companies are doing is saying there's a precedent here. And I've talked about this a lot before, but now there's quite a hubbub going on. COPPA is seen as a success. I see it as a failure. I think children are the worst served sector of society online because we've extended stranger danger to the extent that children shouldn't be in line at all. So, I mean, Gina, God knows by the time Etta is 13 what's going to be available.
Well, I don't think this is onerous. To say that you cannot collect personal information from children younger than 13 does not seem onerous.
Unless you have the parents, but there also talk. There has been talk about extending this to 18.
Well, that I would agree is wrong. But yeah. Do you not agree that requiring parental permission before collecting information? The problem was that there were these Disney sites that were aimed at 5-year-olds and 6-year-olds and 7-year-olds that were getting email address, phone numbers.
Right. But here's the problem, Leo. It's the definition of what PII, what's personally identifiable information. And that's been broadened so much in this that it's anything. So when I was on a phone call with the FTC staff attorney on these regulation extensions, when I was part of a group called the Future of Privacy Forum, I think it's called. Obviously, I'm not a very engaged member if I can't remember the name. But anyway, and one of the people asked, well, if I had a geography game and I wanted to teach you something about distances and want to make it sensible to you and start with your hometown, could I do that? No. Your parents would have to do it through signing a piece of paper and scanning it in or faxing it or having a video conference with the company to get permission for that.
Yeah, now, but I don't think that breaks the functionality of the site if I can't get your hometown.
Well, it's an example of what's wrong. As long as there's no other PII associated with it, the problem is that just having that broad location was defined as PII. Nothing else you could do with it. It's gone overboard there. And that's the problem, is there's a presumption that everything associated with kids and online and any information whatsoever is bad.
Facebook's argument here, they use Khan Academy as an example. So let's say there's a 12-year-old wants to study math. Khan Academy monetizes by, among other things, putting a like button on there, okay? Quote, part of the – this is Facebook's letter to the – is it the FTC? Yeah, the Federal Trade Commission. They said, oh, now I've lost my place because I scrolled up. Part of the issue is the social functionality widely used by educational sites and apps is dependent on plugins like. Like is a plugin in this case, and could be threatened by the COPPA rule that renders plugin providers responsible for the actions and motives of third parties and vice versa.
What they're saying is that Khan Academy would take down the like button just on general principles so that they don't get in trouble, or Twitter Facebook would find themselves liable for another site's misuse of it.
Well, why doesn't Facebook, instead of doing this, say, we're going to enforce the rule that says you can't be a Facebook member if you're under 13. That eliminates the problem.
Let's switch to Dana Boyd's research on this, which found that in people 12 years old, a majority of...
I understand. Facebook doesn't enforce it. They need to enforce it.
Well, wait a second here. 76% of the of those sites from children at age 12, that is to say underage, on Facebook were created with the help of their parents. So...
Facebook would have to do is say, signing up your child for Facebook, you're agreeing.
But, no. The parents are helping their children lie. That's Dana's point.
Yeah.
It's because the FTC rules are so onerous. If the parent does want you on Facebook for one reason, right, to be able to talk to grandma, or then you cannot do it for email.
We're losing you again. You're breaking up.
I mean, there's always a problem with this kind of thing because kids don't vote, and their parents do, and the parents don't like the sound of certain things, like, for example, that their kids are being, marginally identifiable information is being tracked. There's a larger problem on the wider internet about marketing to children that is borderline predatory, because they're using they're marketing to kids who don't know what marketing is. One example is that there's a McDonald's site that allows kids as young as 4 years old to register for things.
Right.
And when they register, they voluntarily give certain types of information. There are, all the junk food companies, Nesquik and Nestle and McDonald's and Pepsi, they all have, and most of us are not even aware of this, most of us who don't have kids of that age, they all have these children's sites that are full of games and downloadable stuff, and they're just being the heck marketed out of them. And this is a slightly different idea, but the larger problem that I think Congress and the FTC are having to deal with is the fact that there's a lot of marketing attention at children. Part of it is personally identifiable information, but even if they can't personally identify them, they can gather information in an algorithmic way and present information in a way that is very compelling to children. Who just think that they're playing a game or something like that, when in fact they're being taught to drink Pepsi or something like that.
Facebook's
so it's really a problem.
Facebook's point is that it's really technologically infeasible. It can't yeah. be effectively done. So what they're saying is they want the commission to not adopt these new standards and, consistent with the existing statute, hold general audience plugin providers, i.e. Facebook, liable under COPPA only when they have actual knowledge that they are collecting personal information from a child
right.
under
That's
13. Because they can't otherwise know. And it would be too onerous to ask them to figure that out. I think that's right. not unfair.
Yeah, I think it's not.
It's more of a technological.
Of
yeah, it's yeah. It's a technological limitation.
Right.
I think we like, should make them. I think the government should make them a deal and say that okay, we'll say that like is free speech, but so is a mother who posts a picture of herself breastfeeding her baby is also free speech.
No, no, I'm sorry.
Touche.
Not allowed. Not allowed, Gina. Not allowed.
I'm just flashing on these conversations with Gina in 13 years
oh,
with
boy.
Anna, trying to say, "Well, dear, no, you really shouldn't do that." Well, did you do that, Mom? It's the equivalent of,
"Oh yeah,
you smoke pot, Dad."
Oh, yeah. How old were you when yeah. you got your Facebook account, Mom? So let me ask you, Gina, have you thought about this at all? Have you talked with your partner about this? What age are you going to let Etta get on Facebook?
Yeah, that's
25.
I mean, I'm really hoping to hold out until she's 13 or 14, kind yeah. of, you know, of age, teenager.
I let my kids, it wasn't Facebook, it was MySpace, but I let my kids mm-hmm. have MySpace pages when they were underage.
Yeah, I mean, my brother, you know, signed my nephews up for Xbox and lied about their age. Like, yeah. that's, you know, that's basically what everybody does. I'm gonna try to hold her off as much as possible. Right now I'm just trying to get the feeding schedule down.
Yeah, you're right. Just get him to sleep and the rest follows.
I have a few years to think about it.
Okay? As long as you think.
We wanna push you to start now, Gina. Oh. Start thinking now.
Yeah, when she's 34.
We're gonna take a break. When we come back, tips, tools, and numbers, but first a word from stamps.com. Why go to the post office when the post office will come to you? I ask you at stamps.com. If you mail a lot of stuff, this is not, look, if you mail a letter a month, this isn't for you. But if you're an eBay seller, an Amazon seller, an Etsy seller, if you send, you know, a business that sends out invoices or, you know, bills, if you do a lot of mailing, you got to get a stamps.com account. It means you can print your own stamps. It's so much better than a postal meter, for instance. I know many of you probably have postal meters. Forget that. That's so 19th century. With Stamps.com, you use your computer, your printer. You can print right on the envelope. Your company logo can be a part of that. The address could be a part of that. So Stamps.com, for instance, will pull from your QuickBooks address book and churn out a bunch of envelopes with postage on it and everything. It's so cool. It's so cool. For packages, too, they'll print out the mailing labels. If you're doing international mailing, it'll do that. And the post office loves stamps.com so much, they give them discounts you can't get anywhere else. Not at the post office. 21%, up to 21% on express mail, 15% on priority mail, discounts on international mailing. You also, you know, the mail carrier will come to you, not just on their regular rounds, but you can schedule a free pickup anytime. It's just, it is a great service. Let me point you to stamps.com. Now, right on the front page, you see the $80? We're going to do a better job for you. Join the 2 billion people who use, that's not right. What did it say? 2 billion people who use stamps.com? Click the radio. It can't be right. There you go. Look at that. New picture, too. I aged a little bit. Click the radio microphone, enter the offer code TWIG, and you'll get this $110 bonus offer, including $55 in free postage. That great USB scale is so useful. You just plop the package or envelope on there, and it tells you exactly what it costs, always up to date with the stamps. $5 supply kit and a 4-week trial, no cost to you. You just pay the shipping and handling on the scale, which is about $5. I think stamps.com is fantastic. I want you to try it. Please take advantage of this very generous, no-risk trial offer. With $55 free postage from stamps.com, you can put up to 25 pounds in that scale cabin. I don't know what the minimum is. An ounce, I would guess. Anything less than an ounce, just go like that and it'll get there. Stamps.com. Click the try it free button, the microphone up in the upper right-hand corner. Use our offer code TWIG for that $110 no-risk trial. We love it. They got a new picture. That Tony Wang took that. That's a nice picture. That's a real. That's what I really look like. Thank you, Tony, for that taking that picture. Gina Trapani, we're going to let you go. I know you've got, I don't know, something to do, breastfeeding, something. Something motherly. You got spit up. Motherly. You got something. So why don't you give us your tip of the week here.
Tip of the week. This is kind of exciting. I just launched today Tapbot, which is the company that makes Tweetbot.
Love Tweetbot. Yeah, yeah. Love Tweetbot.
They just released a client for app.net, which
what?
Is an open Twitter alternative.
Because they're doing a desktop client for Twitter eventually. It's in beta.
Yeah, yeah. It's called NetBot. So if you go to tapbots.com/software/netbot. This is an app.net client that's got that whole Tweetbot kind of style and feel. It cross-posts to Twitter.
You're
that's
kidding.
Really cool.
Oh, yeah. I'm getting this right now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's $4.99. It's for iOS only, unfortunately. And, you know, there are tons of app.net clients and Dalton Caldwell service, and it's open source, and it's got open API.
He's lowered the price on that, by the way.
Oh, and he has lowered the price. Yeah. It's $36 now instead
a year,
of 50.
Or you can do it. It's $5 a month, something like that.
Mm-hmm,
I can't remember what it is, but yeah.
But these folks just make really good iOS apps, and they have a lot of experience building a really awesome Twitter client for a long time. So if this app.net client, if you want to use app.net more, which I do, and I just haven't taken the time to do it, now that you can cross-post to Twitter, this looks pretty good. So I'm downloading it now from the app store. It's $4.99. Interestingly, it's $4.99, whereas Tweetbot is $2.99. So it's app.net in general is a little more expensive.
Huh.
But if you're into the kind of the open Twitter alternative, this is really good news for app.net.
Start using this exclusively. Forget it.
Yeah.
I know you. That's awesome.
Yeah, I'm gonna give it a try. I'm gonna start posting to both and see what's going on at app.net. I think all this really app.net needed was a really good client, and this looks like it's it.
Well, you know, there's dozens. That's what's kind of interesting, including one or two iOS and Android clients. But you get one from a developer like Tapbots, which do the best iOS stuff of all. That's great.
Yeah, it's great. It's
big
great.
News. Thank you. I'm downloading it right now. My password, and there we go. Do you have a tip or anything you'd like to share with us, Mr. Michael Elgin?
Yes. I have a general tip for Google Plus, because there's a whole bunch of people. There's this kind of growing subculture of people on Google Plus who are switching from blogging to blogging on Google Plus and abandoning their blogs.
Just like you.
Just like me. And Tim O'Reilly is into this as
really?
Well to a certain
wow.
extent. He's a champion of it. But it there's a whole bunch of people who are on the fence. They just can't bring themselves to move to a kind of generic looking site from their customized site and all this kind of stuff. So I give people the following advice if you want to do this. First of all, do it as an experiment. 1 month, tell your blog, I'm going to be over blogging on Google Plus. Here's the URL. Come check it out for 1 month. If it doesn't work out, I'll be back on this blog. And then so that way you can sort of like have an out if you don't like the way it happens. Then when you're on there, don't make the mistake that almost everybody makes, which is that when you post in a link, there's a little box to put in a link, and it gives you the little thumbnail and the little blurb. It looks like non-compelling. I was going to say it looks like crap, but that's a little too strong. It doesn't look like crap. It just doesn't look – we live in a visual social web now. Everything is visual. If you look at the What's Hot list on Google Plus,
always a picture.
Look at Pinterest.
Yep.
Look at the rise of Pinterest. It's all about pictures. You have to have compelling visuals with anything you want to be compelling. So don't use the little box. Don't use the thumbnails. Do a full-size picture every single post. Even if you're sharing things within reason. I mean, some things, if you share it, the whole picture will show. But make sure you have a nice visual. Do real blogging on Google Plus. Don't blog over there and then just do a link to that blog. You're never going to get traction that way. And almost everybody who does blogging on Google Plus sees maybe a tenfold increase in traffic and engagement right away, within two or three weeks. So I just recommend, you know, I can't say that it's a good idea for everybody. A lot of people need better archiving. They need, you know, curation and stuff like that. But if you think you might want to try blogging on Google Plus, I just recommend people try it for a month. Use big pictures, do real blogging, be active, engage, and you know, a lot of people are reporting that it's pretty awesome when they do that.
And Mike, as I said before we got on the air, when I visited with the Google Plus staff, they love you and emphasize that they have had no relationship with you. They just, you're just a super user, an amazing user. I also beat them up every time I have the opportunity to say inline links. If you look at what Ev Williams did at Medium, it's an extremely simple user interface. You mark a word, you have five choices. Have I just gone down again?
Yeah.
Bold, ital, big, little, or link. And, you know, just a simple little thing like that in Google Plus would make it so much more appropriate to the net. And it's ironic that Google, that lives on links and learns from links, does not enable links in Google Plus. And so they've got to just get their act together and do that. And I think they know it.
Yeah. There's a long, long list of things that they really have to do to improve it as a blogging platform. But, you know, Google Plus ultimately is supposed to be everything to everyone. I mean, and it's, so it's a long road to get to that point. But for now, it has a lot of flaws. There are a lot of things missing, a lot of features we'd like to see. But there's a hardcore user base of people who are super active, very intelligent, very engaged. And so it's really a great place to build a community if you're a writer or if you have, you know, any reason to build community. It's a great place to do that.
And use the special Mike Elgin formatting technique if you really want engagement. Bold first line headline.
Yes.
New paragraph. Picture, summary, what do you put next?
What I typically do is I try to summarize what the information is. I make the headline actually a sentence with punctuation.
Not just like a, okay.
Because I auto post to Twitter and I wanted to look good on Twitter also.
Right.
You know, just write really clear language, use good style for the web, which means a lot of parentheses, very small paragraphs. Don't be too wordy. Have a good picture, and then just have a great conversation. I mean, the post is just the beginning of it. So you don't want to just have this post that's the final word. You want to start a conversation, ask questions, crowdsource on every single post or nearly every post, and it's a great way to learn. I've always believed that the best thing about blogging isn't what I teach; it's what I learn from people who engage in the posts.
So amen, brother.
Google Plus is the best place I've found to do that. It's, as Tim O'Reilly said, it's like Tumblr, but more social.
Yeah.
Wow. I have to think about this. Because you're like, there's only you and a few other people there.
Well, you know, I have...
You've got to admit, it's gotten a little quieter over there.
Well, it hasn't. What happened is that, you have to keep circling people and you have to keep uncircling people because you probably circled like a gazillion people.
And they're gone.
And some of those wandered off.
Right.
But some new ones wandered in and you haven't circled those yet. So
right.
I'll send you my Ghostbusters kit. I have a Ghostbusters kit about how to keep the engagement going, how to discover all the great people. You can't be shy about using all of the features. You got to block, you got to uncircle, you got to circle, you got to plus one, and if you really use all the features, like I have so many people that I'd like to circle that I can't. There's too many people. There are too many great photographers times 100.
Right.
I mean, there are, and people think it's all photographers and tech and stuff like that. I dare you to search for any topic. Any topic at all, the most obscure topic, and you'll find a thriving community around the topic.
Okay.
Home beer brewing, raising rabbits. I mean, you name it. There's lots of people talking about everything there. You just have to use search. You have to keep circling and uncircling.
All right.
Here's a key thing about Google Plus real quickly, too, is that supposedly, thanks to being on the list, I have 1.8 million followers. But it's obvious, and the Google people grinned at me when I said this, that everything that I write is not presented to all of them. They have an algorithm in the middle that chooses to figure out how to give you relevance in your feed.
No doubt.
So you are not publishing to everybody you think you're publishing to, which is actually okay. So those who might be interested in me, if Google does a good job with that algorithm, because after all, life is an algorithm, then they're delivering relevance to those people, and that's why they come back in the conversation with me. And same for me. I get relevant stuff and not irrelevant crap. And so that's how Google is very, very, very quietly. They won't acknowledge it so much, but they are stage managing the conversation through a gigantic conversational algorithm, which is the untold story, I think, of Google Plus.
And you yeah. notice it? Can you tell?
I can tell that I'm not getting junk replies from the people right. from the people with strange names from other lands or made up names. Gina?
Well, yeah, I've been tracking Plus Ones and reply rates over my Google Plus post through ThinkUp for a while now, and every once in a while I get a post that just goes crazy nuts off the map, and they must be promoting it. You know, it must make it into a higher feed. But there's definitely an algorithm there where they're promoting stuff, showing more stuff. I don't know if it's content based. I don't know if it's, you know, uptake right away. But yeah, I think Jeff is absolutely right, and I'd actually love to know more about it.
They won't say a word.
Yeah, good luck.
Yeah.
Well, Facebook does that too, right? I mean, in fact, Facebook just announced yes, for $7 you can buy a higher position in the news feed.
Oh, God.
I don't know if that's a good idea.
That's kind of a sign of desperation.
$7.
You're so lonely. You had
to every time you're on mic, you convince me to try it again, so I'm going to go back. Although now I'm using the AppNet on my TapBots on my iPhone, and I love it.
I have a strong case against AppNet as well. So,
I'm sure you do.
the beauty of advertiser supported social networking like Facebook and Google Plus and Twitter is that it's egalitarian and international. So there are people for whom the $5 a month thing or whatever AppNet is charging is a huge amount of money, and so you end up with a very elite group of people, and maybe that's a desirable thing. But there's something thrilling to me about being able to talk to the entire world, and the advertising is subsidizing it. Yeah, Google Plus doesn't have advertising in Google Plus, but it is an advertising-supported social network. It's just the ads are somewhere else.
Right.
But I really I hope that they open up app.net and make it free eventually. And I would really get behind it if that was the case.
Yeah, I mean, that's a really fair point, Mike. Earlier I called app.net open. It's obviously not open source. When I said open, I meant that it provides an open API without restriction. And there are definitely problems with app.net, the cost being one of them. But it's interesting to see alternatives and see kind of what shakes out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Your number, Mr. Jarvis.
All right. I'm going to have a fun one, not the stuff I had run down. So Mike Arrington blogged this week. I love it so much that a Kickstarter project for a book on how to fund Kickstarter projects, of course, failed and didn't get its $35,000 to be done. So I just enjoyed the irony, and that's my number.
How to use Kickstarter. Not how we did it. Yeah. Apparently. We don't know anything about using Kickstarter. We didn't mention it, and I wish I didn't bring my phone in, but I see somebody mentioned it in the rundown, this new Google app, which I find very interesting, called, what's it called?
Field Trip.
I like it, but now who wrote that they took it out?
I did.
Because it was too chatty.
I love the idea. No, the problem was it wasn't giving me anything specific. It was just saying, hey, we have lists of...
Oh, no. You got to come to Petaluma. It depends where you are.
I live in New York. You think I'd have...
You would think you'd... I can't go a block without... And I turned on it telling me, because you can say, hey, if I see something... if I walk by something interesting, tell me. I can't go a block without it saying, over there is where they filmed American Graffiti. There's the house in Peggy Sue Got Married. Across the street, the last performance of Sublime. It's constant. Petaluma. They must have somebody in Petaluma.
Yeah.
I like it. It's beautifully done.
Great idea.
It's free. There's a story behind it, which I've forgotten about its genesis. It's from a Googler.
Yes.
And it's called Field Trip, free for Android. And the idea is... it has a number of sources to tell you about points of interest as you wander your world. And, you know, one of the sources is a movie location book. And apparently a lot of movies were filmed in Petaluma. So that's kind of fun. It's got architecture, historic places, offers and deals. You can see why they did this. food, drinks, and fun, movie locations, outdoor art, and obscure places of interest. It has a setting so it says you can say, have it, announce it out loud as I walk by, which is quite, I've had a number of conversations as I'm walking down the street with people, and my phone starts talking, and I say, wait a minute. And it tells me something, and I say, oh, okay, and we move on. You should get it anyway. It's free. It's interesting. It's different. Field trip.
And it's the future of all search. I think that what's going to happen in the future is that there will be constant harvesting of contextual information. And there'll just be a screaming feed on the nearest computer of search results going by, even though you never asked a question.
Amen.
Never did a search. Yeah. There's a company, was launched at TechCrunch Disrupt called MindMeld. It's an iPad app. And basically what this does is you do a video conference and the app listens to what everybody is talking about and provides results as you're going by. You know, you have a conversation and what was the name of that actress?
Oh,
that
was in so-and-so it just pops movie. It up for it you.
It'll just put that actress there even if you never even look at the screen. And it just does it with constant and real time. I think that's the future of, I think that we're getting to the point where we're going to have search results always at our fingertips, whether we search or not. And that's going to be a good thing. It's going to be a terrible thing also because children will grow up not knowing how to ask questions because they'll always have answers.
Somebody will be talking to them.
Questions. Yeah.
Oh, I don't know. I kind of think it's interesting. It is. Eric Schmidt's pants example, basically. So I don't know why it doesn't have New York. It goes off for me.
I'll get it to work, but it goes off with just generic stuff. So my wife's going to kill me if I don't eat dinner soon, but I just want one little Trivi 831 on Twitter just sent me a link from The Verge saying that YouTube is today announcing changes to the policies surrounding its copy ID, copyright management protection system.
Well, we'll see what they are, and then I will cheer. Maybe we did it all by ourselves.
Human beings will have final say, says the poll quote.
Oh, well, I hope that's right.
We'll see.
That could really change our lives. Thank you so much, Jeff, for being here. Go have dinner. Jeff Jarvis is at BuzzMachine.com, also the author of Public Parts, available now at finer bookstores. All about life in the public. Judith Trapani is at SmarterWare.org. That's her blog. You can also download her work from ThinkUp.com. It's great to have you back. We missed you.
It's wonderful to have you back, Mom.
Great to be back. Great to be back.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Thank you to Mike Elgin for joining us all the way from Greece, where it's now like 3 in the morning. I don't know. It's late. We'll let you get to bed.
It's never too late in Greece.
It's time for dinner.
Absolutely.
Follow him on Google+, where he is blogging constantly. Or just go to elgan.com and link you right over. Thank you guys for being here. We do Twig at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern, 1800 UTC on Wednesdays on the Twit Network. If you don't watch live, though, you can always get an on-demand version, audio or video, from our website, twit.tv/twig. Do stay tuned. Triangulation's next with John Hodgman. His new book is now out on Audible, and we will talk about it in just a few minutes. I know I love John.
The Hodge.
He's the Hodge. That is all. Thank you for joining us. We'll see you next time.
Thank you all.